It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay. We have to talk about wood milk. I can tell by your reaction that you know what I'm talking about, so that's good.
Yes, I know what you're talking about. And do you really have to talk about
we really have to, because it's all I've been thinking about for like the last week. I have a lot of feelings about this.
Okay.
So, for those who don't know, I'm going to spell this out in a series of steps that consist of one sentence, of which every single step confuses and surprises me, which is why we have to talk about this. So, the dairy lobby. I don't know which specific organization, maybe Dairy Farmers America, whoever's behind the Got Milk campaign. In the year of our Lord 2023, hired huge actor Aubrey Plaza to play Aubrey Plaza in an ad in which she presents her new product, wood milk, which then goes on to be I'm not gonna lie, super funny, super clever, but incredibly mean-spirited commercial, just shitting all over the concept of plant-based milk. I do get that the dairy industry has been concerned for a while about plant-based milks because it's cutting into their market share. And in particular, they try and attack the concept that you can call it a milk. And I also get that actors want money, and I'm sure they offered her a ton of money. But it's just, it's really mean. Like, it's really, it's really, like, doesn't plant-based milk taste like shit? Like, it's very, like, that's the whole deal. Like, there is no discussion of, like, nutritional differences or anything like that. The entire commercial is plant-based milk is gross, and it's amazing they can sell it, not for reasons involving its impact on the body, but just it's so nasty. Like, and then paid the money to have it come up a lot. I have seen this commercial on YouTube several times now. And at least a couple of times on other streaming services. Either that or the algorithm has decided I'm the person who needs to know that plant-based milks taste like shit, which is hilarious because I'm one of those who still drink a dairy milk because I'm not lactose intolerant and I clearly have no consideration for animals or the environment. So
I had to go look for it. I heard about it. As you can imagine, my news sources often talk about the things that you were talking, like news about the dairy, dairy
lobby
board or whatever
industry. Yeah.
Yeah, losing their lawsuit against these other places, insisting that they can't use the word milk, and they lost their suit on that or whatever. So I get that news all the time, and somehow in that all of that feed was something about this commercial, not a link to it, I don't think. So I had to go look for it. I have not seen it in the wild. I've only seen it YouTube and found it. And I thought it was hilarious.
I have seen it comfortably half a dozen times, if not more, in the last week.
Now, here's the thing.
Less than that, since we got back from Oregon.
If it wasn't made by the milk people, if it was just an SNL sketch, everyone just would have thought it was funny. Probably even including the people who make plant-based milks, because it's just funny.
And yeah, I want it to be clear. It is a very clever and amusing commercial.
Very funny.
I have, every time I get it, it's one of those I can skip after like 5 seconds, and I have never skipped it.
Aubrey Plaza is great in it. She's pitch perfect in it. It's very funny. She's
doing exactly there seems to be a big thing of like Aubrey Plaza has this reputation now because of some of the roles that she started in, and that there seems to be an implication that's not really what she's like, or at least she seems to want to imply that. But in this, she's very much that.
Yeah, it's very funny. And like I said, I think if it were an SNL sketch or something, even, you know, everybody would think it was funny. Even the soy milk industry would probably think it's kind of funny. But because it comes from the dairy industry, yeah, it does seem a little mean. And it also seems, I don't fault Aubrey Plaza at all, because it's hilarious. You know, she's a comedian. That's fine.
And again, making money, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Know, it's her job.
But as far as the, you know, as far as it coming from the milk industry, it's like, it's not just funny, but it's a little misleading, maybe, coming from them. I don't know what makes it more misleading coming from them versus like Saturday Night Live or something, but it does.
And the reveal is the last second. And that's that's the thing. If it was a comedy sketch, it would just be, you know, there's all these plant-based milks out here. Now we've got wood milk.
Yeah, yeah.
This one is all about wood milk, and it's her selling it. She's the co-founder, except she also clearly thinks it's a bad idea. I don't know. There's a couple of parts but then at the very end, they're like, is wood milk real? No, only milk is real milk. And then she's like, then what the hell did I invest in? And then they cut to the Got Milk logo. The first time I watched it, I'm just like, hi, I'm Aubrey Plaza. And I'm like, you are in an ad? What? And I'm watching, and she's like, and I'm like, what the hell is this gonna be for? I was excited. I was like, is this a new show? What is happening? And it's for milk. And I'm like, this makes me want to buy plant-based milk, because y'all are being dicks.
Well, I think that's what makes it seem misleading, is because, like I said, if it was SNL, you could just treat it all like a joke. But
because there are so many, it seems like everybody out there is like, hey, here's a plant product. Let's see if we can make it into milk. There are so many these days. I get it.
Right. But, you know, some of the jokes are about how plant-based milks are made, which is a joke. But when it comes from the milk people, you kind of get the impression they want you to think that is how plant-based milks are made, but they're not made.
Even a joke where she drinks it and she has a wood milk mustache and she says, got wood?
Yeah, yeah.
Which,
yeah.
You're the dairy lobby. What are wholesome. You doing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know.
I have such a weird combination of admiration and disgust in them. Like, this makes you all look like dicks, but it also kind of makes you look cool in a weird, like, because it's very clever. There's a whole bit in the middle about the flavors, and it comes in cherry, the wood, not the fruit, and maple, the wood, not the syrup, and then mahogany, the wood, not the table, which I'm like, I love that. It's bizarre, but it's like real mean.
She's good in it. She's great in it.
She is. She's great. She pitch perfect as per usual. I'm gonna be honest. I haven't seen many, if any, of her dramatic attempts, because they tend to be things that don't look like things I would want to see. But comedically, she's amazing. And always has been. And this, she does a great job too. If it weren't for, like you said, if it wasn't the dairy lobby, I would say this is hilarious. But it's them. And I'm like, you guys are being really cool.
Yeah, there's, it seems a little weird coming from them.
Obnoxious, but
like if it was, if it came from Cracked or College Humor, it would just be hilarious. And like I said, absolutely, everybody would think it was absolutely funny, I'll bet. But yeah, coming from the Dairy people, it feels a little,
it's rough. It's rough.
Yeah. Feels a little weird.
Hello everyone. Welcome to Magic Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that would like to speak to your manager, but only because we're single and attracted to power. I'm Tony.
And I'm William. This is episode 632.
I feel like you've grown so much over the years we've done this. I mean that when I made that joke a few years ago, you would have been like, what? No, I don't. This time you were like, oh, yeah, that could be. I like that. I like that. I
mean, like, okay,
you're stretching out of your comfort zone. I appreciate that. I want to make things very clear this time around because I have been told from listeners that the last episode that was filmed in Oregon, I was obviously high and was kind of crazy. And all I'm going to say to that is I was currently in a state where that's legal, so shut up. Yeah, you can't tell. You never can tell when I'm high. Back in the day when I was really abusing it, I was probably high every third or fourth episode. You never can tell.
Nope. You can tell.
But other people, I think it's a takes one to know one thing. The other people who have told me are people who know what that's like.
I run into this all the time. I like Abby and I go somewhere or with other friends. We'll see somebody, we'll talk to them, walking away. Wow, that person was really drunk or really high or whatever. I'm like, what? Really?
You're like, or they're like, wow, that person was very clearly on fire. And you're like, huh? I didn't catch at all.
If they were slurring their speech or falling down or something, sure. But I mean, it's really got to be serious for all notice.
I feel like it's hard to tell with me because sober me acts an awful lot like high people act.
Yeah.
And I am not bothered by that. Mm. But yeah. And to be fair, I was only a little high because I have, at least in my personal opinion, flat out ruined episodes of this show by being too high because I just couldn't focus enough and it was crazy. So I do keep that in mind. And also the people who have told me this have not said it was a bad episode. They actually found it quite funny, but anyway, so I want to be focused this time. Say this is another two-parter because William is going on a booze cruise to Cancun or something involving his schooling. I don't remember one of those next week. So we are doing another double episode, which means I'm only going to explain how the show works in this episode. Not that it matters because for like the fourth week now, we got nothing in the email. We are on our freaking own. So we have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people used to write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever the crap they wanted. All the times, any of the times, whatever it is. And the hat magically forwarded us those emails. And we would read them and talk about them, except a lot of times we didn't. But now, all the times we don't, because nobody would. And that's the show. And I'm not going to explain it next week, because it's going to be a two-parter. And yeah. You like my headband?
Sure.
I recently purchased a 10-pack of different colored bandanas. Because I'm getting bald up here, and I'm not trying to hide it, but I am trying to be much more cognizant about not letting the sun burn the top of my head.
Yeah.
I'm very uncomfortable on planes. We all know this. I get very sweaty on planes and I thought it might be good there. So I bought them just before the trip. And now I'm thinking I might wear them during a podcast so that you can tell different episodes because I'll have different colors. Because when you get a 10-pack of all different colors, you get quite a lot of interesting ones. This mm-hmm. one, the camera's not picking up really well, but it's a nice sort of pale blue with just a hint of green to it a little bit, I think. Of course, I forgot to bring another one. I don't know if I'll get up in between, so we'll see. Anyway, because nobody's been writing in, and because I traveled a lot and you're traveling a lot, and because I don't really like talking to you anymore, I've been keeping a memo of what has been happening to talk about on the podcast. And it has wood milk in it. So I could tick that off. But other than mostly those kind of things, I like things I've seen and stuff, there hasn't been a lot going on with me. So how's your week and two, 9 days. How's your 9 days?
Good, mostly school. Did we ever talk about The Mandalorian, the latest season of The Mandalorian?
No, and I haven't seen it yet, so it's all done now, so we should probably get to it. But but let's talk a little more about Hello Tomorrow.
Okay.
Do you forget what it is?
No, I'm afraid there might have been an episode that I haven't seen, but I think I've seen it all. Is it done? Well,
when last time we talked about it, there was one episode you hadn't seen that was coming out like 3 days later, I believe. It is done.
Oh, I might not have seen the very last one.
Well, that's okay, because we haven't seen the last two.
Oh.
And aren't going to?
Oh, you're not going to? Okay.
Well, I might. We as a couple are not. And I might, because it's only an hour of time, and so whatever. But two things. One, as mentioned before, it's not, I don't actually care about that story. It turned out it's not really sci-fi. It is, but not in any narrative way that matters. And episode 8 of 10 was not a bad ending. Like, we were both like, I don't know what they're gonna do with the last two episodes, and it was arguably the most satisfying conclusion of an episode that we had had in quite a while, so we were like, maybe we're not gonna fuck with it. But we will see. But yeah, we got one, all I'll say to sort of give you context is it's the one that heavily involves the sheriff.
Well, maybe I have seen them all.
Well, there's two more after that.
Then I think I've seen two more after that.
There we go. Do you think it was the last two were that satisfying?
Well, pretty much all of the issues that we spoke of that, you know, with it, and I acknowledge that those were all valid issues, including not quite understanding why the setting is what it is and why the aesthetic is what it is.
Or at least acknowledging there wasn't a reason it needed to be like that.
Yeah. I think that remains true clear to the end. It's like,
that's okay. I will just, is there a more satisfying conclusion after two more episodes?
I don't think so.
Then maybe so. We'll
in see. Fact, now that you're talking about it, I think I remember thinking the same thing. I remember thinking, where can they possibly go with this? And they did something. I mean, it wasn't.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It wasn't like filler for the last two.
It clearly was planned as an arc.
Sure, and it was fine, but it didn't. It wasn't. Well, that was worth it. You know what I mean? It was just okay. They did that. You know, and it didn't.
It didn't
matter that much. It didn't seem like.
I am at the point, and I feel very petty about this, but there are characters in that show who things currently suck for them that I am worried they're going to have some redemptive arc and get like a happy-ish ending, and I don't fucking want them to because they're horrible. And so that's a little bit of it. I'm like, right now, their lives suck. And I'm worried in the last two, they're not going to suck anymore.
I think
don't tell me on that one. We'll see. We may see a lot of Izzy in these two episodes here because she is at peak hunger strike right now. So she is squirrely as hell and desperate for attention as hell.
I mean, I really like the performances in it. I just really like watching everybody.
Yeah.
And I like how it looks. But it is kind of important to me for other elements to make sense or to have some kind of organic, like you were saying, the setting and the aesthetic. What's it for? Why, you know, yeah, I love it, but what's it for?
Well, I'm not even mad. It doesn't have to be there. It's just that's what drew me in was those things. And it turns out that outside of their production value, essentially, they have no bearing on the story. And every part of the story is stuff I don't enjoy.
Yeah, I have to say I'm
it's very bleak. It's very very unsympathetic characters, sort of across. I mean, there are some. But the ones with agency are very unsympathetic. And even the ones that are sympathetic become sort of unsympathetic. It's very much one of those. It's a tragedy. It's very much a tragic story, in my opinion. So we'll see. I'm sorry, though. I didn't mean to derail this. You've watched all of season three of The Mandalorian?
Yeah.
It is good?
Well, I liked it. But I've liked all of them. And
So have I.
I hear people say, well, it has this problem, that problem. And I often hear those things and I go, yeah, but it's still cool because of this, this, and this. So it's another example where the things that I like about it far outweigh the things that I notice along with everybody else. But season three seemed to get a lot more criticism than any other season, including from people who usually like the show.
Oh.
But when I say that, I only mean I'm hearing from people that it's been criticized. I can't find that criticism anywhere. It's like, what are people saying? And it might be so part of it is episodes that they think did not have enough of the main character in it, or, you know, and
that's probably a deal they had to make because he stole a couple episodes from Boba Fett. So,
yeah.
Paying it forward.
So, I mean, but for me, it was like, there were some episodes where Abby and I are watching and we're thinking, wow, that was a bold choice to have an episode like that. Or that was a little weird. But not to the extent where we like disliked it or hated it or thought we're outraged by it. It was just, oh, well, that was interesting. But I think overall, I think some of the things that I liked that I was really excited to see, other people thought distracted from the main character, which.
I mean, do keep in mind, this is still a Star Wars, which means there is a fan base out there who can want to burn it to the ground because of like a cameo or a lack of a cameo.
Sure. Well, and also, I really love, you know, jetpacks and pew, pew, pew. You know, I just love that stuff. I mean, if they have a action set piece in it like that, it almost doesn't even matter to me what else is in it, which is weird for me to say because I'm not usually like that for any type of action scene. But this stuff is so cool and it's been done so well this season, so well that I'm like, yeah, you know, this is great. I love it. But it was probably the least popular season so far, and they're probably the one that drew the most criticism, according to some people. And the best I can make about those criticisms are, to me, they're kind of minor and even a little petty. But like you said, like DC, you know, Star Wars is one of those properties that people can get upset about the littlest thing, really upset about the littlest thing.
I would say Mandalorian is the only Star Wars property that I'm still having any interest in. We'll watch it, but also I have tamped when I first when it first came out, I was like, I am super into this. And second season, I was like, yeah, still I'm okay. But we'll watch it, but I'm not worried. Like, if I'm not gonna be like, oh, it was bad. Like, if it's bad, I'm not gonna be super disappointed. And I don't imagine I will like love it, but I think I'll like it. It's again, I like the property. I like it the best when it doesn't include other characters that I know from other things, especially Jedi, because I'm fucking sick of Jedi. So I imagine, let me ask you this. Are we anticipating another season?
I don't know.
All right. Did it feel like a resolution? Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess the second did as well.
No, it felt, it did feel like a thing that if they didn't want to make any more, they ended it. It did feel like that.
Good. I like that.
No cliffhangers or not, you know, nothing hanging out in the whatever. But also the world building stopped at a place where there's material, you know. If you wanted to, you could very easily keep going. If you wanted to, but you don't have to. That was what it's like.
Old school British method. Have a story arc, have it complete, but leave some stuff that if it's popular, you can do another story arc. I want all of my TV shows to be like that all the time.
I kind of do too. But I'd like to see more of what they built. Although saying that, not only is, you know, what's out there something they can keep this show going on, but there are other shows that they could keep going on if they wanted to. And I would watch those probably.
They have announced a billion new shows right now. Holy crap. The Star Wars celebration thing. So many. Mm. Which I don't know that I'm gonna mess with, but we'll see. I wanna veer slightly for a second because I want your take on this. I guess we all finally saw a real trailer for the Flash movie. Mm. Is just Spider-Man No Way Home. But DC, like, it seems similar to a borderline lawsuit point. Like, it seems really similar to what that last Spider-Man was. It's very clearly we're going for a multiverse thing. We're coming with an excuse to bring old actors back in. Like, it just seems super the same. Well, and even the blatant Marvel stealing things that DC did when it was trying to make its own cinematic universe in the beginning didn't seem as blatant as this does.
Well, I mean, it let's just put it this way. If Marvel filed suit on that premise, they'd lose because they could prove that this concept was being worked on by DC and Warner Brothers long before the Spider-Man movie.
Well, and I mean, I'm sure we could find literally every comic book series in the world has done this plot, but it just seems so on the nose.
And this is based on a very popular Flash comic where he goes back in time to save his mom. And
yeah.
In that one, the Batman that he deals with in the alternate universe or whatever is Thomas Wayne, because Bruce and Martha are killed. So Thomas becomes Batman.
Did we ever do a Martha Batman? That would have been cool.
I'm sorry. I said Martha and I said it wrong. Bruce was killed. Thomas Wayne becomes Batman and Martha becomes the Joker. That's what happens.
Oh! That's cool. Yeah, I mean,
I messed that up.
That's cool. I didn't know that part. That's cool.
Yeah.
They don't normally do enough with their female characters, especially in the old classic series. So I like that. Flashpoint, which is something the Arrowverse has played with.
Correct.
I know that I didn't watch it, but I know because it was the first thing where you were fucked if you weren't watching every single CW show.
Yeah.
And then it was so successful. They did like three or four more of those. Yeah. Well, it'll be it. I'm not going to see it. I'm also still really bothered. I mean, I get it. It's business or whatever, but I don't like seeing Ezra Miller doing things. I'm uncomfortable with that. But also, it's DC. I was never going to fucking see it. So, but I was just curious your take on that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think of it that way as like being a ripoff of anything Marvel at all. I thought for a
as actually, trailers maybe go, this maybe this says Marvel actually ripped off them when they made Spider-Man No Way Home. So,
well, you know, the rumor is that there wasn't going to be so they didn't know what story they were going to tell with Captain America before they came up with Captain America Civil War or whatever. And that Feige decided they were going to do that after he found out they were going to do Batman v Superman. He thought, no, we got to do Civil War and we got to do it before they do.
I can believe that.
Some of that's also been confirmed even.
From my, weirdly, because again, as I have mentioned before, I've never been a comic book guy, but I used to, well, I actually have, I have a history going back from junior high of being friends with comic book people. And so I hear a lot about this, and I'm not going to say Captain America Civil War was a bad movie. I enjoyed it. It did not do justice to the comic book plot. I mean, it's hard to do it, but like there were so many fascinating bits to that Civil War plot and a lot of things that probably wouldn't translate well into a movie. But to me, the movie was literally just, hey, let's split our action figures arbitrarily into and smoosh them together. In terms of the Civil War plot.
Yeah, yeah.
And it also resolved very quickly, but whatever. And I mean, and Marvel and DC are littered with the corpses of characters killed off to spite the other one, or made to spite the other one, or switched around. Yeah,
it's weird, the relationship between those two.
Yeah.
I thought the trailer, I mean, just as a trailer, looked good. I mean, you know, I am going to see it, but
if I was interested in DC, if I was interested in superhero movies anymore, but specifically DC, yeah, I'd be excited. It looks like it's going to be a good DC superhero movie, he said.
The only,
putting in a lot of asterisks by each word.
The only issue I have with it, and a little bit with the latest Shazam movie, which still haven't seen, but I will see it.
Somebody's got to. No one has so far, so you've got to get on that.
I really did intend to see it in the theater and it just didn't happen. The problem with DC movies right now is, for everybody, I think, including myself, is that as soon as Gunn was given
Mr. James, if you're nasty.
Yeah. James Gunn was given authority basically over the DC movies from here on out. And he said that he was going to start it over. Although he didn't say, when he said that, he didn't say it was going to be a hard reboot or a soft reboot or whatever.
Although he has since said he's keeping a lot of his own property.
Exactly. So. That's the problem. The problem is, well, there's two problems. If he was going to hard reboot and even get rid of his own stuff, who's going to want to watch this stuff coming out right now? It's irrelevant to what's coming later. But even with a soft reboot, that's pretty much true for Flash, probably, and I think it
definitely
might not
true
have been
for Shazam.
Well, I think that was iffy. If Shazam had been successful, maybe it would have gotten through.
Okay.
Since what's his name didn't show up as Superman in the first one. Anyway.
Oh, Henry Cavill. Yeah. You could do that.
So there was a little bit of, you could almost pretend that the Shazams weren't connected, right? And maybe you could slip it through, but that's not true anymore. So
you could, but as I understand it, the original goal was Shazam and Black Adam.
Mm-hmm.
And when Black Adam, I mean, maybe spoilers, the new Shazam creates brand new antagonists that have never appeared in the comics, as I understand it. Because they didn't get... I assumed they did, but then I watched something that said, no, they just made them up out of whole cloth. Because they couldn't get Black Adam. And I think Shazam was pretty much dead then. Which was, in fact, even slightly before all the James Gunn announcements and stuff. Because the whole deal was to get Black Adam in there, and then Black Adam tanked. For a variety. But to be fair, Black Adam tanking was tied into all the James Gunn stuff. So I don't exactly know the order, but
yeah, nobody really knows where Warner Brothers is going to go. It's hard to get audiences excited about these movies that they kind of know aren't going to have anything to do with what happens in the future. Now, people like me who are DC fans will go see it, obviously, but I can totally understand someone who's a casual viewer who is only going to be interested if it's related to something they've already seen or something they're going to see, because that's how people watch comic book movies now.
That's yeah, that as you were saying it, I'm like, what a weird world we've created where we're like, right. I'm not going to watch this movie because it's clearly not going to be tied to the cinematic universe.
I think people think that.
And we have gotten there quick. We have gotten there in like 15 years.
Yeah.
Whereas I now have come full circle and I'm on the other side. I'm like, I might watch it if it looks good, as long as you can promise me I don't need to do homework first.
I think there are some people who feel that way too. It's like they enjoyed the run with Marvel, but they're like, I don't want to do that again. That was fun once, but I'm done. I'm not going to do that again. I think a lot of people feel that way too.
I saw a trailer for a TV show and it sucks because I only saw it once and I don't remember what it's called. It's for a new, I believe, series on Disney Plus that is not in any way tied into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But what it is directed by the person who directed Shang-Chi and starring the male and female lead from Everything Everywhere All at Once, Michelle Yeoh, and the gentleman whose name I really need to learn because I admire him so much now, but the guy who was her husband in that, her husband's. And it's a superhero. Like it's very clearly a superhero story. It involves this Asian American kid in a school. And then this Asian kid transfers in and they sort of like make him be his friend to show him the ropes, even though he's not really, like, it's kind of racist shit. But then it turns out the new kid is the chosen hero from another world, and our original kid is supposed to be his guardian, and there becomes like other dimensions and shit. So it's really like they took Miss Marvel and Everything Everywhere All at Once and are smushing them together using actual cast from Everything Everywhere All at Once. And I'm kind of into that idea. Again, it's got that young adult bullshit that I'm not sure I'll watch it. But I'm like, just nakedly derivative. But also nakedly derivative of at least one thing that I really loved. So, but I don't know what it was called. If anybody knows, if anybody's listening, and if anybody knows.
I didn't even see that.
I've only seen it once. But it was a nice long trailer. It looks very cool. In that it looks like they're just taking a lot of stuff from that. Get in the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us. Or if you're watching this on YouTube, get in the comments there and tell us about that. You should get into the YouTube thing more. Jazz apparently doesn't want to talk on the blog anymore. She's talking on YouTube because I requested it. Full disclosure, Jazz. I understand you just did what I asked, but what I really want is literally any person who ever listens to this to do multiple comments in both sources, because I am desperate and needy for attention. Anyway, but yeah, so that looked cool too. All right. I got a lot of things on this list. So,
go ahead, please.
So many things. All right.
So much time.
The problem is because I was allegedly high last time, I don't remember for sure if I talked about some of these. There's only one that I'm really uncertain about. Well, there's two. Okay, one. Did I talk about Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome?
Like watching it? with...
Did I mention the movie at all, William? This shouldn't be a tough question.
Well, I don't remember if you talked about it. I'm pretty sure you did bring it up, yeah.
All right, then I must have. Yeah. No, because Trish hadn't seen it.
Yeah, that's what you...
That's what it was. Okay, Trish cool. Yeah, no, then I have covered that one. Did I talk about Jaws?
Jaws?
Yes.
No.
All right. Well, Trish finds out I'd never seen Jaws. And is like, you need to see Jaws.
You had never seen Jaws?
I had never seen Jaws. I don't give a shit about creature features in general, especially not the nature. Like, I don't care about when just like normal animals kill. I've also never seen the birds. I've also never, but yeah.
Oh, okay. Well,
and again, it's one of those where I feel like I've seen every goddamn scene in it. And so why do I need to?
But you see a lot of films that you're not interested in, but it's film lore, so you watch it.
Less and less, actually. Okay. But what I'm describing here is exactly how I talked about The Godfather. Same deal.
Yeah.
I had never seen it. And I was like, okay, whatever. And also, you know, the hype. I'm like, same fucking thing happened here. Jaws is a pretty fucking good movie.
Yeah.
I was impressed. Really, and it's so Jaws was successful and it spawned approximately 35 million ripoffs. Just tons of them, including Jaws 2, The Revenge, all of those too, which in general, from what I have heard, not so good, especially Jaws the Revenge. Holy shit. But anyway, but it's solid Spielberg direction, and you can see glimmers of his future career, and also there's a lot of things in the film craft of it that, even though it was the 70s and even though it wasn't much of a budget, hold up way better than you would expect. I mean, don't get it twisted. You're not confused that it's real or anything. And they're like, it's obvious when it's a fake shark. It's obvious when they're doing footage that is completely unrelated to what they were filming in the previous cut. I mean, just, but done in a very intelligent and creative way. And outside of the usual issues with this kind of thing of like people doing stupid stuff so the movie can happen, which I'm starting to realize isn't an aspect of bad movie making. It's just an aspect of literally all movie making,
which disappoints
me, but there it is. It holds up really well. But what's really funny to me, and I've seen bits of it, there is a scene with the three big leads on a boat at night getting drunk and comparing scars and other things like that. No shark involved or anything. Like no action happening. It's just the three of them sitting around talking, occasionally singing. That scene's amazing. I could watch that scene. That is easily the best scene in the movie. I could watch that 1,000 times. Roy Scheider in his prime, a baby Richard Dreyfuss that just gives you a scene of like, because there came a point in Richard Dreyfuss's career where you hire him because he's Richard Dreyfuss. And you know that. You're like, this is Richard Dreyfuss. We want a Richard Dreyfuss here. Let's put a Richard Dreyfuss in here. But in this, he's just a young act. I mean, I don't think this was his first thing, but he's not huge yet. And he's really good. He's really good. Possibly my favorite character in it. And weird stuff. The youngest son, who's like maybe 7, does a really good job. And I looked him up and acted in absolutely nothing after this. He's in like a documentary about the making of or something, but like that's it. It's really, and also it's a movie where a lot of nothing happens for quite a while. We do not. I knew we didn't see the shark until late, but we don't see the shark until real late. Like the movie is mostly done by the time we see that shark. It's good. It's real good. I was surprised.
There's two scenes from Jaws that are shown in film schools and acting schools. the one you're talking about.
It's great.
But also the one where he's sitting in front of, I think he's sitting in front of a chalkboard and the camera's
nail scraping. Yeah.
Yeah, that scene and the camera sort of slowly coming in while he's talking. That's a pretty
good one. Again, that's what and it's good. And I really like, I can't believe I forgot that actor's name. He was a big deal. He was probably the biggest deal going into the movie. But the one who played Quint, yeah, he's it's one of those things where like I disliked his character enough at first that it took a while, but then I'm like, oh, and especially because the movie in a relatively short time is like, yeah, here's this character. He's kind of a dick. He's kind of sucks. And then over the movie, you're like, but here's why. And here's and he some of what you see is not so much his character, but the way he communicates and you learn more about what kind of person like it. I've been really impressed. Another thing, and this, I don't know if we had listeners and any of them were big Jaws heads, this could make them mad. But so I gather in the second movie, Roy Scheider's character is just fucking, it's aliens thing. In the second one, he's just a fucking shark killer. He's a useless sack of shit in this movie. In every respect, he is not like, he's clearly the one most worried about the shark, but he's not exactly doing a lot. Like, he thinks we should close the beaches and stuff like that, but he's not pushing that issue real hard. And in the actual shark hunting parts, he's fucking useless. Like, he is, in my opinion, not like, you could have done the movie without him and the result would have basically been the same. I mean, don't get me wrong, it would have been more boring. I'm not saying I'm sad the character was in there, but I'm saying I do not consider him at all a heroic character in this film. And that's, it's weird that like history has decided he is. Which I guess is a little bit true with Ripley in Alien 2. I mean, I don't know. I haven't watched Alien in a while and I've still never seen Aliens, but I gather she's a badass in Aliens. I mean, we got to get away from her, you bitch bit, whatever. But in the first one, she's just sort of the luckiest victim, which is fine. That works perfectly for that movie. I don't want to get and say her either, but I was a little bit surprised. It was like, Brody's awesome. Is he? He seems just kind of stressed out, anxiety prone dude who, yeah. And it's got his worst, and it's very 70s, which I enjoy. I always enjoy things that are very 70s. But yeah, so that was neat to see that. And it makes me, like, this makes me more want to visit these movies that I'm like, I already know everything about them. They're not really of interest to me, but they are lauded as being amazing. Because I get surprises like this. Now, to be fair, for every Godfather and Jaws, there's an Escape from New York. And a Halloween. Maybe it's John Carpenter. The fog was really good, people. But, you know, the original Halloween, Escape from New York, whatever. So that was fun. All right, I do have one more thing I want to talk about, and then we should wrap up so that we can do it all again. We saw a play. In Cedar Rapids. We saw it primarily because, wait, did I talk about this last time?
No.
Okay. Oh, I think I was telling my family about it, and I was telling it in a way that I would tell it on here. So that's probably what I'm remembering. So
rehearsing, I see.
This is me. This is how I tell stories. I approach life as if I'm on a podcast.
Nice.
One of the saddest and truest things I've ever said. Anyway, Trish has a coworker and friend, who does a lot of local theater. And so we've gone to see him in a few things. And he's in this. So we go to see it. And it's called The Play That Goes Wrong. That's the title of it. And it is a comedic play within a play, where the premise is an amateur theater company is putting on a performance of The Murder at Havisham Manor. and it just all goes to shit. Like, and it's really fun if you've been in plays. A lot of the things are, here's what I imagined when I saw this, here's how I imagined it was written. A bunch of actual theater people just remembered shit that went wrong in their productions and were like, what if it was a little more obvious? And what if everyone involved handled it like an idiot? And it became really funny. And I mean, just like silly shit. So like the mantelpiece falls down. So later there's a lot of times where they have to put shit on the mantle, like as stage direction. And if you and I were in a play, we'd set it on like the floor near the mantle or something. In this one, somebody on the crew punches out part of the things and puts their hands out so they can hold them and stuff like, and weird shit where like they're supposed to go get a prop off of this table and they can't find it. So they grab a different prop and very deliberately are like, I found it, holding up something clearly different. And then later a character has to get a different prop. That's the one that person took. So now they have to take something else and they keep going with it to the point that somebody is taking notes with their pencil in their notebook and literally on stage holding a crystal vase and pretending to write with car keys on it. Like that kind of thing. And like shit falls down. And it's an amateur production. So like one guy is clearly very nervous and he does all of his lines in monotones like this. But then he's clearly been told at some point he needs to emote a little bit. So a whole bunch of his lines just end like this at the end for no reason. He also forgets a lot of the larger words and has them written on his hand and mispronounces them a lot. There's a whole bit where the bottle of brandy that is used a lot in the play, a lot of people have drinks of brandy to calm their nerves and stuff, is empty. So the stage manager sneaks out a jug clearly marked paint thinner and the dude pours it and people drink, and so that becomes a whole constant thing because at a certain point they've caught on, and so whenever their line is I could really use another drink, they're like, somebody actually gets hit in the head on stage and goes unconscious, so they have to bring in someone else to do it with the notebook in their hand, who's terrified, and then that person way later also gets hit in the head and falls unconscious. So they have the original person woke up and came, and then eventually it's a whole deal. There's one guy who's just very proud of himself. So anytime he gives a line, he's like, he's very like mugging to the art, especially if they laugh or anything. He's very, and it's just a blast. It's really fun. I highly recommend it if you can see it. I mean, the run in Cedar Rapids is gone, obviously, but it's really fun. And, our friend was playing the lighting and sound guy who's a character within it. And in fact, the program had a program that was all the fictional actors and tech people and their bios. And then later in the program, you had an actual thing with all the actual actors and their bios. But like the really dumb one, his bio just has like, so like, actor name has been in, and like it clearly he forgot to fill it out or something. It's a bunch of that. But the reason that that's, I mean, that's a very quick story, but here's the thing I figured out. So there is a TV show that a long time ago Amazon Prime suggested I might like called The Goes Wrong Show. And I didn't know exactly what it was, but it was British and it was comedic and it involved theater. So I was like, I will probably want to see this. And I put it on my watch list. I never did. I think I figured out parts of it. I think I found some clips on YouTube or whatever and discovered that it wasn't. I thought it was sort of an improv thing where they would try to do something and then like problems would happen and they'd have to sort of wing it, and that sounded cool to me. And I eventually found out it was more of just sort of a comedy about people being really bad at putting on shows. And I was like, I'm less interested in that or whatever. But you'll note similarities in the titles. I also recently found out The Play That Goes Wrong came out in 2017 in the West End in London, has become a huge thing. Like it's gone on tours and people, it's a big deal. It's having its heyday right now. So I never watched this on Amazon, but the other day, Roku channel had, we have a Roku TV. And so when you move in the menu, there's this whole third of the menu screen that's just dedicated to whatever the fuck Roku is hawking at the moment. And these days they are frequently hawking their own programming because they get things like any streaming service, but also they make their own things now. There are Roku original shows and stuff. So they're doing that. So they were hawking the Goes Wrong show. And this was the first time that I was like, that name and that font are very similar to the thing I saw. Could they be? So I decided to hit and I watched a video or one episode. I watched the Christmas episode, which I'm disappointed. In British television, Christmas episodes are often sort of standalones, but American situations often treat that as the first episode then, whereas more realistically, it should be the last episode.
Sure.
And so I am sorry that I saw this way, but it is... The premise of the show is there's an amateur dramatic society that the BBC has decided to air their plays. And it's the same people. I don't mean it's the actors I saw in Cedar Rapids. Right. It is the same meta characters, literally. It's the same drama society. It's the same set of actors. They have the same names. They have a lot of the same idiosyncrasies. And it just has made it a very different vibe for me because of that. Like the meta-ness of it and the world sort of colliding is really fascinating. And it is fun. I think I would recommend you. I don't think it's as fun as the play necessarily. It's shorter. It's a little, yeah, I don't know. But it's good. I like it. So I would recommend checking out if you check out the Goes Wrong show, then you'd know how you'd feel about this play. And then you can try and see this play sometime, but it is fun. And it gets the play gets crazier in the second act, like after intermission, in very physical ways. When we first came into it, the stage was a very like English manor house thing. And in fact, actually looking at it, I turned to Trish and I said, I think this stage is a conglomeration of every set in every play I was in high school combined. It was really weird. I was like, that feature was from this one, like it's very that kind of a lot of My Fair Lady stuff there. But they also had a second story room. There's a room that's like upstairs or whatever. It had no railing. I'm like, that's not smart. Why would you do that? Well, you would do that because within the show, the supporting beam eventually comes out and the whole thing goes and like slowly gets while there are people up there. And it's scary as shit.
Yeah, it sounds scary.
The set pieces are fantastic. It looks like it's breaking.
Wow.
And Trish figured out there had to have been, the floor must have gone back a long way so you could like leverage it because it breaks and they're up there and like, I mean, yeah. It's not, there is an element of risk to these actors in my opinion.
Sure, sure.
I mean, I'm sure it was all planned out and everything and nobody got hurt, but like there's a lot of potential. And eventually the whole thing just sort of collapsed. And that was fun because at least one of the pieces was adhered to the wall and later somebody has to get something out of it. And so there was a whole bunch of like trying to scramble up the thing. But the best thing, and I'll tell you, so we start with a dead body on the stage. And a lot of the early jokes are the fact that he's just there dead on a fainting couch sort of thing. And people keep like trotting on his hand as they walk by. And so he's like, he obviously jumps on that, but eventually it becomes a thing where he lies there dead, but as they walk by, he just lifts up his arm, puts it back down. But, so eventually, after some more hijinks, they manage to carry off the body. But then, like 10 minutes in, the dead guy bursts through the door and says, "You forgot one thing, Inspector!" And then he looks around and goes, "Oh my God!" and runs out. and then does a similar thing like two or three more times throughout the show. Hmm. So it was not a huge shock when we found out later that he had faked his death. Because he revealed it like four times. There's also a point where, for reasons I don't fully understand, but I kind of do, I told you that people had to replace other people because they got knocked out. There's one point near the end where two people are essentially fighting to play one role, and they keep like trying to push each other out of, and it's really solid. I really enjoy it. So I would recommend The Play That Goes Wrong, or barring that, The Goes Wrong Show. And it's so there is one point where they're supposed to shoot somebody and the gun doesn't make any noise. And I think they just are like bang, bang or something. I don't remember what. But that one cracked me up because when I was in the play of Oliver, at the end, the villain is going away and a cop shoots him from across the stage. And it was just a cap gun. But one night, the cap didn't go. Like, the cap didn't work. And he tried several times. So he, brilliantly in my opinion, ran across the stage and pantomimed smacking him in the back of the head with the gun. And then he collapsed. Because the other problem is the villain on the other side is waiting for the sound of the caps to collapse. But he doesn't hear anything, so he's just standing like this. But so yeah, there were several bits that like brought back memories of like, oh, I remember when that shit happened in plays I was in. So especially if you were a theater kid, I think it's a really good one for that. All right, that's gonna be it for us now. Please like and subscribe. Go to the blog and tell us what you thought about all this. What things have you seen recently? It's going to be a lot of movies and TV right now, folks, because y'all aren't writing us nothing. Also, please write in themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. I know some of you don't like writing in, but when we're desperate, you write in. So this is my plea to that. Because otherwise, it's just this, and nobody wants this. And next week will be right away, and you'll be able to tell because this will be the same color because I'm not gonna bother getting up. So that's how you know. Otherwise, you'd be like that would be fun if we did edit and then like certain shots I clearly had a different color bandana. That would be fun, but we're not gonna do that. Editing.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.